Herman, Pittsburgh Section, Oral History Number 2. This is tape 10. We are in the conference room of Rav Shalom with Rabbi Walter Jacob. Today is January 23, 1997. Dr. Jacob, to see if your voice is recording, would you please tell us your address?
My address?
Yes.
The current address
current
or some
address,
past
of your
address?
Home, of your home.
Oh, that'd be very difficult. I don't know if I can do that.
How about your phone number? Give us your address. Well, okay. Okay. Rabbi Jacob, last week we discussed the responsa in great detail. We discussed the Pittsburgh platform. This week, I would like to ask you about your tenure as chairman of the Central Conference of American Rabbis, how you became chairman, and what occurred during your tenure. And give us the dates, please.
Okay. Dates. That's probably the most difficult.
The chairman.
All right.
I think it's 1990.
Why don't you give them for me? You served 2 years as vice president.
Oh, it's not on here. It's not.
And then as president, that was, I believe, from 89 to 91 as vice president, and 91 to 93 as president. As vice president, you are in charge of programming for the conference, and also look after a lot of the fair number of the committees, because the effort of the conference is to be as democratic as possible and to involve, out of these 1,700 or 1,800 rabbis, as many as possible in some task. And so that really means that somebody has to not so much organize the committees, that's the president's prerogative and burden, but to keep them going. So you spend an enormous amount of time talking to committee chairs, trying to move them along and trying to, in this way, do the work of the conference, because this large group had, at that point, and still does, a single executive. And somebody in charge of publications, and that's all. So 90% of the work of the ongoing major tasks have to be performed by volunteers. That was interesting, and planning the meetings was also interesting, because this has been a time of transition in which there was much more emphasis on ongoing education done in this framework than before. It had always been ongoing education, but it was handled more by the Hebrew Union College. Now it was something that we were taking over, and it was to be done partly at meetings of the conference, with many more study sessions, serious study sessions, and partly through special symposia arranged in various sections of the country, or you might say better study sessions with one or two people who would do them, and partly also doing this by telephone or through the computer.
Can I ask you a question? When you say study sessions, are these for the rabbis?
Yes.
Only?
Yes.
Okay.
So that in an effort, as in all professions, to continue studying in an organized fashion. Lots of rabbis study individually. Others find that get into small groups in big cities. That's easy to do. But there are a great many people who are hundreds of miles from anybody else. And so I try to help organize that, and also to organize what has developed into a once or twice a year major symposium that focuses on some scholarly aspect of Judaism at the Hebrew Union College. So those things kept me occupied as vice president. By the way,
are these things published?
No, they're not intended to be published. They're intended, and some of this was also done at regional meetings, which turned away much more from the practical to the theoretical, so that there'll be a scholar who will, regional meetings are usually maybe 3 days or something like that, but in 3 days you've got a fair amount of time to really do some serious work with some texts or with some major figure or some area, Bible, Mishnah, Talmud, whatever. By the way, I heard about being nominated to the vice presidency, which is sort of preliminary to being nominated to the presidency, while I was on a trip. I got a phone call in London where the executive vice president tracked me down and asked if I were interested in.
I see. Now, were you on the board prior to that?
I was not on the board. Okay. I'd been on the board in the past, but at that point I was not on the board and hadn't been on the board probably for 6 or 8 years.
And what was your job on
the board? On the board, well, while I was on the board, I was responsa chair and got involved in various other short-term things, some of them not so short-term, like changing the basic thought, you might say, for on status to patrilineal descent. I was part of that committee. And then part of a committee, it really wasn't a committee, it was just a single appointment, to see if we could work out a common system of conversion for people who were immigrating to Israel from the United States principally, but any diaspora land, so that reform and conservative conversions would be recognized in Israel. So that involved, there were only four people involved, you know, an Orthodox, a conservative, and a reform, and somebody from the chief rabbin. So that involved a couple of trips to New York and one trip to Jerusalem, just sitting and debating. Nothing came of it in the end because the chief rabbin, after long discussions, when it looked as if agreement had been reached, and we were trying to make sure that the English and Hebrew documents were alike and didn't carry separate overtones, they torpedoed it, as they have many other things like that.
You were talking about the conversion.
Talking about the chief rabbinate
okay.
in Israel and,
right.
and conversions.
Okay, how about
yet.
The patrilineal descent?
Patrilineal descent. That was long debates on that, and finally a resolution which came to a conference in Los Angeles where it was amended and changed from the floor. And I didn't attend that convention because on my way out, I went skiing at Lake Tahoe and broke my leg. And so instead of going to the convention, I came home. But I guess what I could say about that particular trip west is I got the best half of it.
Please explain.
Well, I got the skiing part in it, rather than the
but
convention.
But what decision
part.
Did they come to?
They decided to adopt patrilineal, or really non-lineal descent.
Not okay.
Yes.
And this is not just reform?
Yeah, this is reform.
Only reform.
And this was a good while back. I think that was 83, something like that. The whole thought was that the major change really is that status would not be automatic. You had to do something about it, whether you were a descendant of a Jewish male or a Jewish female. And that you, either educationally or by involvement, something had to happen before you could really be considered a good member of the Jewish community.
So it was sort of case by case?
No, it wasn't case by case. No. Well, in a vague way, you might say it was case by case, but if you did get involved, then you would be considered Jewish.
But this is not, this is only reform.
Correct. A reform, I don't know whether you could say it's only reform, because what happens is that most people will not bother to check that. You know, if a child from a mixed reform marriage goes to an Orthodox rabbi to be married, then if they don't raise the issue, but simply say, "We want to get married. Are you Jewish?" "Yes." Okay. And if he doesn't ask beyond that, and what many Orthodox rabbis will not, and if the person who has come to be married isn't foolish enough to raise the question, then you're okay. If they are foolish enough, then they have to suffer the consequences. But that's true with any bureaucracy. Don't raise issues that they haven't raised.
Okay.
Now, as far as going on to the presidency, in most instances, unless something dreadful has happened, you'll be nominated as president, because in those years as vice president, you also work very closely with the president and try to see, you know, not only what needs to be done, but to develop some common policy, you might say. In the presidency, what were the issues? Well, first of all, there was an internal issue, and that was finances. The conference had very little money, and it was necessary to change the whatever the financial arrangements were, and to look into that, which is certainly not my favorite occupation. But it needed to be done. And so we saved money wherever we could, principally by cutting committee meetings and seeing that a lot of that was done by telephone or at least the beginning on the computer. And secondly, by staying in very poor hotels in New York when there were committee meetings. So that trips to New York were not necessarily fun. Under those circumstances, so that was one thing that needed to be done. Another was that more needed to be done with the regents of the conference, so that they would feel not only more part of the ongoing workings of what was happening, but also would be able to serve as a sounding board for any changes that might occur, whether it was patrilineal descent, which was already in the past, or a status of gay and lesbian rabbis, or lots of a rediscussion again of mixed marriage, intermarriage. So all those things, instead of just bringing them to the major meeting, the effort was to try to have as many discussions on a more local level. And to do that, you really needed to go to each of those regional meetings, which...
You were president?
Yes, there were about 10 of those in the course of a year. And then, of course, you represent the Central Conference of American Rabbis at all reform meetings. That means the meetings of the lay organization, the Union of American Hebrew Congregations, their various board meetings and executive board meetings, and the meetings of the Hebrew Union College, whatever they have. And then you try to do something with the conservative and Orthodox groups. So in those 2 years, I suppose I was out of town virtually every week for something. And it makes it a little difficult, first of all, to continue the carry on the congregation.
Wait a minute.
I don't think I missed very many weekends, but I sure missed a lot of calls, and I tried to visit people in between, but after a while you just run out of time.
You mentioned that. You know, you led up to that last week. Let me ask you this. You said you had difficulty with finances. How is this finance? Do you pay dues, or are you subsidized?
No, you pay dues.
Each rabbi pays dues.
Each rabbi pays dues, and then a certain amount of income comes from the publications, educational books, prayer books, that sort of thing. A small amount comes from an endowment. And then you try, as any organization, if you have a specific project, to find some funding through a foundation or something like that. So let's say that you're working on a new series of books. And although the basic work will be done on a voluntary basis, you'll still need some secretarial help, and then you'll need some help in getting printed to begin with, and then they may recoup their costs. So you try to get a foundation to help with that or to underwrite it. So you're also involved in writing grant proposals and that sort of thing.
So that was your responsibility as well?
Well, some of that, yeah. And then the other thing is you try to keep this thing reasonably personal, and so be in touch with people who've either suffered a loss, or somebody's died, or who are very ill, or who may be in a poor financial situation, and you try to discover who they are and help them. And that's principally due to the fact that for a long time, I guess until the 1950s, there was really no well-organized pension system. And so some people who retired, either not so much before that, but whose major part of the revenue was before that, really were left with very little as far as pension goes. And so you try to discover those people or their widows and then find a way of helping them. So those kinds of things are also reasonably time-consuming, and see what you can do. So that's, that's, you might say, the organizational end of it. And there was one other matter which was really a problem for about 6 months. The executive director had a heart attack. And so for about a half a year, there wasn't anybody in charge in the office except an office manager. The office is in New York. So I tried to look in there as much as possible and also try to keep on top of things by telephone, virtually on a daily basis, to keep the machinery running, make sure that the little questions which always come up, which can keep an office from functioning, get answered. So that was a rather busy time, you might say. On the broader scene, what did I try to emphasize? The main thing I tried to emphasize, and I did that through a speech at the conference, and then through writing and whatever else was possible, was that we create Reform Jewish standards. Those standards for, principally for behavior. I wasn't so much concerned about rituals, because rituals, we have a pretty good idea of what is or should be done. But beyond that, what do we really expect of Reform Jews? And that we begin to set these things down on paper, knowing that they'll change from one age to another, but at least have something that we can say, this is what we expect of you. And if you don't do it, at least you'll have a bad conscience. may not be able to do anything beyond that, but Judaism has rarely been able to do anything beyond that. And to do this in an organized fashion, and to begin that process, which is going to be a long-range process, and to do it by, you know, the kind of categories that you normally think of, family, husband and wife, those sorts of things. And then by other categories, like professions. You know, is there anything that a Jewish physician should be doing that would put him or her on a different level than a general physician?
Can you give an example?
In that field, I can't give you an example yet because we're trying to work out standards in each of these.
Can you give me an example in another area?
But let's say in the legal profession, to what extent do we expect people to do pro bono work? Some pro bono is expected of everybody, but shouldn't it be beyond that? Then what kind of, you know, some of our folks in our profession are close to ambulance chasers. Now, what do we, first of all, what do we say about that kind of thing? And secondly, do we want to set up some sort of a system of, maybe not discipline, that sounds too harsh, but saying to ourselves, if somebody falls into that category, they should not be honored by serving on a board, they should not be called up for Torah honors, but we should make it clear to the community that, you know, this person is really, he may be Jewish, he may not have done anything punishable, legally punishable, but he or she are not living up to what are considered decent Jewish standards. So those sorts of things. So that was really a major effort. Another effort, not quite as major, was to get us to be a little bit more aware of Reform Judaism outside the United States, and to really be concerned with those people, do something to help, and to think of ourselves, if we call ourselves the Central Conference of American Rabbis, that we have we've always had members in Canada, we have a Canadian responsibility, and probably also responsibility, America goes all the way down to Chile, for the rest of this continent.
Do you have members from those countries?
Yes.
You do?
Small number in South America, a lot in Canada. Mm-hmm. So I tried to emphasize that in a, you know, both some specifics, and then just incidentally by starting my presidential address, which happened to be in San Antonio, in Spanish, and by doing the same thing the next year, which happened to be in Montreal, in French. And, you know, first paragraph in those languages, and then just went ahead. I didn't translate it. You know, if you got it, you got it. If not, too bad. So those were, you might say, kind of the major emphases of those years. And if I think of anything else, I'll talk about it next time. I guess I ought to say one other thing about this whole thing. What happened then subsequently is that, unfortunately, our executive vice president found out that he had cancer.
Now, is he the person who had the heart?
Yeah, same person.
Same heart?
Yes.
So he was the paid profession?
Paid professional, okay. Yes. And very, very devoted and very, very diligent. I mean, this man really spent endless hours. When he commuted, he was always dictating. And from home at night, he'd make loads and loads of telephone calls. So really, really devoted to the conference and its members in an effort to try to see this, and that's the way it has to be seen, as a congregation of rabbis. This happens to be a very large congregation.
What was his name?
His name was Joseph Glaser. Now, he died at the time of the next president, Shelley Zimmerman, who subsequently became president of the Hebrew Union College. And we've been good friends for a long time. There was a task of finding a replacement, and Shelley asked me to head up that committee to find the right person to interview and to see to it that this worked out. Now, I have to also say one other thing about the travels of the, it's kind of funny when you think back of it, of the presidency. Because you're president, you are asked to come to all kinds of occasions in congregations or in the life of rabbis. So when I wasn't here, I was usually celebrating somebody somewhere else and trying to do that as president of the Central Conference.
Okay.
The other thing that was interesting was a number of times at the Union of American Hebrew Congregations, a whole set of issues arose that lay people wanted to raise: mixed marriage. How do you treat mixed marriage? And it was necessary at those meetings, both the large national meetings, which are 4,000 people, and the smaller executive or board meetings, to not only discuss these things, but to also say, look, there are certain things which are the prerogative of the rabbis to decide, and you're not going to decide these matters by resolution from the floor. So there's a certain amount of politics, you might say, that arises in all of this too.
But that's the
well,
committee. No, wait.
No, see, that's
the Union of American Hebrew Congregations.
Yeah, but as president of the Central Conference, you are on that board,
okay,
and also on that executive, that inner board. And in theory, you're also, I didn't have time to go to any meetings, you become a vice president of the World Union of Progressive Judaism. But, there was enough to do that I think I went to one meeting, that's all. Didn't stay very long.
So when it comes right down to it, which you, in the very beginning, described as your position as a rabbi of this congregation, you have to... A rabbi has autonomy within his own congregation, and you are really, even though you consult and you get together with other rabbis, you yourself maintain what you feel is important to you and to your congregation. There's really no Supreme Court or any...
Well, there isn't, but on the other hand, practically it doesn't work that way for two reasons. One is... I guess for three reasons. One is a very practical reason, and that is that there's a lot of mobility, and probably less in Pittsburgh than elsewhere. So people who move from one setting to another don't suddenly want to find themselves in a totally different Jewish world. So that's a very practical reason. Secondly, as you're a part of a movement, through education you've put and through your own commitment you put yourself into that movement. So if you were really uncomfortable with the way things were happening, you would be a conservative rabbi, a Reconstructionist rabbi, or a traditional rabbi, or anything else like that. So that you're really talking more about the edges than the core of the matter. And finally, it's very difficult to stand totally alone. You know, if you go to your board and you say, this is my position, that's one thing. And if you say, this is my position, and this has been the decision of the Central Conference of American Rabbis, and there are 1,800 of us, and we've thought this through, it's a little different. Particularly if you are a young rabbi, just starting out.
Okay. My next question now, is there any connections, not the right word, but I'll use it anyhow for one of a better word, with the Hebrew Union College?
Yes, these three organizations are really on par with each other.
And there is...
Oh, yeah. First of all, we sit on each other's boards. So at every meeting of the board of the Central